Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we sift through fascinating material to bring you insights that truly matter. Today, we're taking a journey back to the heart of the Italian Renaissance, to a book that quite literally defined what it meant to be an ideal gentleman and gentlewoman. Baldassare Castiglione's The Book of the Courtier. Our mission is to extract the essential nuggets from this really timeless work. We want to understand what it truly meant to be well-rounded, graceful, purposeful back then, and then, maybe more importantly, explore how these, you know, centuries-old insights still connect, perhaps surprisingly, with our very modern lives today.
It's such a rich text, isn't it? And it offers so much more than just, like, historical etiquette rules. As we get started, I want you, the listener, to maybe hold on to one key idea, something Castiglione introduces quite early. Sprezzatura.
Ah, yes, sprezzatura.
Right. It's that almost mysterious art of making really difficult things look completely effortless, a kind of nonchalance that hides all the practice, all the hard work. So even before we really dig in, maybe think about, where in your own life do you see that? Or where do you maybe strive for that kind of effortless excellence?
Okay, yeah, good question to keep in mind. So let's unpack this. Who was the mind behind these ideas, this architect of the ideal?
Baldassare Castiglione, born 1478. You mentioned he wasn't just some detached academic.
Not at all. That's crucial. He was, in many ways, the living, breathing example of his own ideal courtier.
So what was his life like? How did it actually mirror what he was writing about?
Well, he didn't just theorize about courtly life. He really lived it. Castiglione was a prominent Italian courtier himself. He was a diplomat, a soldier, a dedicated humanist.
You're a real Renaissance man before the term was even coined, almost.
Pretty much. Yeah. His education was deeply rooted in the classics, Greek, Latin, the ancient wisdom. And he spent loads of time in the most elite, sophisticated courts in Italy, especially Urbino. Ah, Urbino.
No.
That features heavily in the book itself, right?
Exactly. Under Duchess Elisabetta Gonzaga, Urbino was this renowned hub of culture, learning, civility, and Castiglione was right there, part of the conversations that eventually became the backbone of the book. So what makes his perspective so powerful is that his authority comes from being both a keen observer and an active participant. He wasn't just writing down rules he'd read somewhere.
He was codifying the unwritten rules he actually lived by.
Precisely. Turning them into this broader philosophy about, well, everything, aesthetics, ethics, politics even. It wasn't abstract theory. It was his life distilled, a blueprint for mastering oneself, really.
And the way he presented these ideas is also quite remarkable, isn't it? It's not a dry rule book.
No, far from it. He frames the whole thing as this engaging, fictional series of after-dinner conversations.
Right. Over four evenings in March 1507 at the Ducal Palace in Urbino, with real historical figures playing a game to define the perfect courtier. It's a brilliant setup.
It really is. Very clever narrative device, kind of echoes Plato or Cicero's dialogues. And these conversations, they guide you on a journey.
How so?
Well, they start with the more external things, physical skills, grace, appearance. Then they gradually move inward, you know, to intellectual stuff, social conduct, and finally these really deep internal qualities, even spiritual aspects. It feels like you're actually there listening in.
And the impact this book had.
Yeah.
It was huge, wasn't it? Not just for Italy.
Oh, massive. It wasn't just a guide for Italian courtiers for a few years. It quickly became the foundational text for anyone aspiring to be a gentleman or a lady for centuries. It shaped ideas about civility, education, how to behave right across the Western world. A lot of what we think of as being cultured or well-mannered has roots right here.
Okay, so let's dig into this courtier's toolkit then. Starting with book one, led by Count Ludovico da Canossa. They begin, maybe predictably for the time, with noble birth and physical grace.
Yeah, being handsome, well-built, seen as sort of outward signs of inner quality, made it easier to get noticed, gain favor, but that's just the starting point.
Right, not enough on its own.
Definitely not. The courtier's main job, so to speak, was arms. He had to be a brave, skilled, loyal soldier, good at wrestling, horsemanship, leading troops.
But there's a twist, right?
Yes, and it's crucial. This warrior fierceness had to be tempered. That same tough soldier needed to show grace and restraint in peacetime. It's this constant balancing act, strength and elegance together.
And this is where we get to the real core, the concept that ties it all together, Sprezzatura.
Exactly. Count Ludovico describes it as a certain nonchalance, so as to conceal all art and make whatever one does or says appear to be without effort and almost without any thought about it.
The art of artlessness, making hard things look easy.
Precisely, and that's why it's so key. It's not about being lazy or unprepared. It's about achieving such mastery, such practice, that your excellence seems completely natural, like it costs you nothing.
Can you give a modern example, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Think about a really skilled presenter who seems totally at ease, engaging, conversational, even though they've probably spent weeks prepping. Or a negotiator who stays cool and collected, making their points calmly, making the other side think their position is rock solid.
Right. It projects confidence and competence.
Exactly. Sprezzatura isn't about faking it. It's about the deep mastery that allows you to appear effortless and totally in command, even when things are complex or high stakes. It makes people trust you.
Okay, so beyond the physical and the martial, there's a huge emphasis on education, humanist education.
Absolutely fundamental. Deep knowledge of Greek and Latin, knowing the great poets, orators, historians, being able to write elegantly yourself, both prose and poetry.
And this wasn't just for show.
No, it was about cultivating wisdom, eloquence, understanding human nature, really broadening the mind.
And complementing that intellectual side was
his artistic sensibility. The ideal courtier wasn't just a bookworm or a soldier. He was expected to be a pretty decent amateur artist, drawing, painting, and especially music.
Music seems important.
Very. Playing instruments, singing. These were seen as ways to cultivate a sensitivity to beauty, to harmony. It refines the soul, adds another layer of grace. So even just in book one, you get this amazing blend. Warrior, scholar, artist, all wrapped up in Sprezzatura.
Okay, so book I lays the foundation, the skills, the mindset.
Yeah.
Then book two, led by Federico Fregoso, shifts gears a bit.
Right. It moves from what skills you need to how you actually use them in social situations. It's all about application, knowing the right time, the right manner.
Without boasting.
Exactly. Let your skills speak for themselves or be discovered naturally. Or say you're in a friendly competition, engage with a kind of lightheartedness. Don't look like you're desperately trying to win, even if you are. It's about managing perceptions.
And conversation is key here, too.
Hugely important. Adapting to your audience is crucial. Speak clearly, elegantly, be serious with serious people, lighthearted with others. It's basically a masterclass in social navigation.
Telling good stories, being agreeable.
Without being a flatterer, yeah.
Yeah.
Making people feel comfortable around you.
And humor plays a big role. Face CD, they called it.
Yes, wit and humor. The book actually breaks down different types, anecdotes, clever retorts, puns, that kind of thing.
But there are rules, right?
Definitely. The humor has to be clever, well-timed, and crucially, never cool or vulgar. It's supposed to be a sign of intelligence and confidence, a way to build connections, not to attack people.
It's also about what not to do, isn't it? Avoiding bad behavior.
Absolutely. Avoiding things like envy, slander, getting into pointless arguments. The courtier needs to maintain this calm dignity, there's a great phrase, a reverent familiarity with the prince or whoever's in charge.
Meaning
you're respectful, but not groveling. You're friendly, but not overly familiar or disrespectful. It's about self-control, interacting thoughtfully, strategically.
Right, so then we get to book three, and the focus shifts to the ladies, the ideal court lady, the Donna di Palazzo.
That's right. This part's led by Giuliano de' Medici, with the Duchess Elisabetta and Emilia Pia, these very influential women, presiding over the discussion.
And there are similarities to the courtier, but also differences.
Yes, many shared qualities. Noble birth, grace, intelligence, education, wit, skills in music, dance, painting, and Sprezzatura applies to her too.
But the unique qualities.
The main one is described as a soft and delicate tenderness, as opposed to the courtier's more martial manliness. She needs modesty, discretion. Her role is seen as being this civilizing, harmonizing influence, inspiring men towards virtue.
And there's a debate about women's virtue in there, too.
There is. A really interesting one where Giuliano argues strongly for women's capacity for virtue, pushing back against some skeptical voices like Gaspar Pallavicino. It was quite progressive for the era, challenging some common assumptions.
And for the ladies, conduct, especially around love and admiration, was crucial.
Extremely. Meticulously guarding her honor was paramount. Accepting praise gracefully, but not encouraging anything improper. It was a delicate dance, maintaining dignity in that complex social world where reputation was everything.
Okay, so we had the ideal courtier, the ideal court lady. Where does it all lead? Book 4 seems to bring it all together.
It really does. Ottaviano Fragoso leads this discussion, and he argues quite powerfully that all these skills, all this grace, it's all kind of pointless without a higher purpose.
And that purpose is?
The courtier's ultimate goal is to be a moral advisor to his prince, to use all that charm, wisdom, social skill, all that sprezzatura to guide the ruler and the state towards justice and virtue.
So it elevates the courtier from just a charming socialite
to a political philosopher, a moral guide, using influence for the greater good. It gives real weight and meaning to all those accomplishments.
And the book ends on a really high note, doesn't it? With Pietro Bembo's monologue.
Oh, it's stunning. It's all about Neoplatonic love. The idea is that appreciating physical beauty in a person, in art, in music, is just the first rung on a ladder.
A ladder leading where?
Leading upwards towards appreciating universal abstract beauty, like seeing the perfect idea of justice or truth or goodness reflected in the world. And ultimately, for Castiglione and Bembo, this ladder leads to divine love, to God.
So it elevates the whole pursuit of beauty and grace.
Exactly. It turns it into a kind of spiritual quest. It gives a profound justification for the entire courtly project, making it about much more than just social climbing or looking good. It's about refining the soul.
Wow. Okay, so that's a lot from the 16th century. How does this, you know, connect to us now?
Yeah.
In our world, which is obviously so different.
Well, these themes are surprisingly timeless, aren't they? Let's start with sprezzatura again. Think about professional life today.
Okay.
That ability to appear calm, competent, prepared, natural,
okay,
even when you're under pressure, that's incredibly valuable. Think presentations, leadership roles, negotiations.
Right. That effortless excellence builds trust way more than someone who looks like they're scrambling or trying way too hard.
Exactly. It's about mastering your stuff so well that the execution looks smooth, intuitive. It lets your real ability shine without the noise of visible effort getting in the way.
And what about the Renaissance man ideal? Being well-rounded. Does that still matter when everyone seems so specialized?
I think it matters more than ever. Castiglione's vision is a powerful argument for, say, a liberal arts education or just cultivating broad interests. In a world that changes so fast, being able to connect different ideas, think critically, communicate well,
and have a wide range of knowledge
is crucial for solving complex problems, for adaptable leadership, for innovation. It's about having a flexible, versatile mind, not just deep but narrow expertise.
That makes sense. And the ethical side. The courtier advising the prince.
That's a direct parallel to ethical leadership today, isn't it? Speaking truth to power. The most valuable people in any organization aren't usually the yes men.
Right. They're the ones with the courage and the skill. Maybe the sprezzatura again, to give honest, constructive feedback.
Precisely. It takes judgment and grace to deliver that feedback effectively so it's actually heard and helps the organization grow. It's about good governance, really, at any level.
And book two felt like a manual for social intelligence.
Totally. Understanding social cues, managing how you come across, using wit or charm to build rapport. These are just fundamental skills for, well, everything. Networking, teamwork, navigating any social or professional setting, building bridges, like you said earlier.
Okay, finally, that Neoplatonic love ladder. How can we interpret that today, maybe in a more secular way?
I think it's about finding deeper meaning and purpose, moving beyond just the superficial, whether that's in relationships, career goals, consumerism, whatever.
So seeking something more profound.
Yeah. Appreciating abstract ideals like justice or creativity or knowledge or genuine human connection. It's an invitation to cultivate a rich inner life, you know, to connect what you do day to day to some kind of higher purpose that goes beyond just the material stuff. It builds resilience.
So the core lesson really seems to be this link between grace, knowledge, and purpose. They aren't separate things.
Not at all. They're intertwined. How you do something matters just as much as what you do. True excellence is this blend of outer elegance and inner substance, inner virtue.
It makes you think about the self as a kind of ongoing project.
Exactly. Castiglione saw the self as a work of art, didn't he? But not crafted out of vanity. Crafted purposefully to serve something larger, to have a positive influence. It prompts us to think about our own development in that way.
Which leads to a final thought, maybe. In our world, which often seems to reward, you know, loud self-promotion and quick wins, what might we gain by perhaps revisiting that quieter power of sprezzatura and connecting it back to a more noble, long-term purpose of influence?
That's a great question to ponder. What does it mean to cultivate that kind of grace and purpose today?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.